يقولون سلام سلام ولا هنا سلام.
You're listening to Middle East Analysis, a podcast series taking a close look at the Middle East North Africa region. Hello and welcome to not quite Middle East Analysis, but we are actually doing a whistle-stop tour looking at three key elements in the Middle East North Africa region with none other than our regular studio guest, Dr. Harry Hagopian. Harry, thanks for being with us.
James, it's a pleasure to be with you today on this short, not quite a Middle East podcast conversation.
But what we've done is, listeners, we've taken advantage of Dr. Harry Hagopian being in the building. I wasn't certain he was going to be with us today. And so this is why you're getting this something of an extra, a bit of a bonus, isn't it, Harry?
And you're doing it in the morning, which is always good, because by now you've realized by afternoon time, my batteries are pretty much depleted, which means that my brain cells are even slower than usual.
Well, with that in mind, Harry, let's crack straight on with this. Now, without being dramatic, we could say ISIS at the gates of Baghdad, but then the militant group are pushing at the borders of Iraq, Syria and Turkey at the moment.
Indeed, James, I think we're not being dramatic when we say that there are lots of concerns about what is happening with ISIS, both at the gates of Baghdad and also in Kurdistan, in Kobani, which was later renamed Ain al-Arab. And in a sense, the three points I would rather stress on regarding this are the following. One, how close are they really to Kobani in the north and Baghdad, the capital? More importantly, I would then ask the question, is the Iraqi army able to resist this onslaught by ISIS? Because at the end of the day, we equipped them, we trained them. Everybody says that the boots on the ground should be Arab boots and not Western boots. Is the army qualified to resist this onslaught across Iraq? And the third point that I would make, the lesson to be drawn from what is happening in Iraq, is that much as we are now talking about the airstrikes, the answer, the solution in Iraq is political and not military.
And the al-Nusra Front, are they complicating things?
Everybody is complicating things because everybody is basically trying to get a piece of the pie, a slice of the pie. And the question is, how do we manage with a stronger central government in Baghdad to unite Iraqis long enough to realize that it is in their interest to fight together rather than against each other?
Minorities, Harry, in Iraq. I'm just going to say it simply, actually. Christians and Yazidis, old news, or people in as much need now as they were then?
They are old news in some sense, but we're living in a 24/7 news culture, James. So yesterday's news is really old news. You said Christians and Yazidis. There are also Kurds and lots of Kurds who are flowing out of Kobani and some Kurdish towns and villages, a lot of them going into Turkey as well. There are over 160,000 who have gone into Turkey only in the last few days. But it's old news in a sense, but not so much old news in a sense as well. And here, perhaps, what I could do is plug a meeting that Cardinal Vincent Nichols had at Archbishop's House, where we had an ecumenical encounter with Orthodox and Catholic bishops and priests. And the idea was, what can the church do for the refugees in Iraq? How can we do something that is practical and not just sloganeering? And the three points that I would again underline there are, one, the humanitarian dimension of how do we help and assist those refugees with roofs over their heads, with food in their mouths, with water, with money, etc. The second one is, how do we ramp up the awareness-raising campaign of the churches to make the media and the secular world realize what is happening to those refugees? And thirdly, and not least importantly, how and in what way do we dialogue with Muslim partners in order to have a united front against what I call is an aberration against God and religion?
But defining the humanitarian concerns or needs is very difficult, isn't it? Because it is out of sight, out of mind. We don't think of the women being trafficked for all sorts of things. We don't think about those children that are starving. How do we refocus?
Well, the refocus is very difficult because there are things happening every day. There are wars and battles. There are deaths every day. So it's very difficult to focus on only one aspect, which is the humanitarian aspect. But there are enough agencies there who are reporting to us and telling us what is happening on the ground for us as a church to realize what our limitations are, as well as our abilities, and act accordingly. And one way to do it is to empower our aid agencies to do more for those people who are almost facing a very rigorous wintry season in Iraq and across the whole region.
Well, our focus has been on Iraq, Syria, Turkey to an extent. Turning now to Libya, Harry, you and I used to speak with sort of hesitant optimism when we were looking at a transitional Libya. But it's disastrous now, is it not?
It is disastrous. Libya is really a disaster. And all the bloggers, all the journalists, all the people I know who report from Libya tell me that this country has really turned into a free-for-all in the sense that anybody who's got guns wants to carve out a little territory which they would call their own. However, if there is one slight ray of hope, it is the meeting that took place at Ghadames in around the border with Algeria, actually, James, where 22 parliamentarians got together and tried to knock their heads together and find a way as to how it is possible to get all those factions, again, a bit like Iraq, but perhaps in a much clearer sense, working together rather than working against each other. And of course, in Libya, there are so many factors that are playing out on the field. One, you have the tribal distinctions within Libya. There's so many tribes, and those tribes are almost sometimes fighting against each other. But there is also what I would call another unsettling phenomenon, and we've seen this with one of the Salafist Muslim leaders, Ashraf al-Mayyar, for instance, who recently came out with a statement in support of the retired army or military man Khalifa Haftar, who is almost launching a campaign against the Islamists the way that President el-Sisi did against the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And he sort of was talking about it in a sense. I think you have the tribal aspects, you have the religious ideological aspects, and you have also all those boys with so many guns trying to fight it out.
Well, getting the key players together is an achievement, but I have to say, tangible steps or a talking shop?
Probably a bit of both. It is to some extent a talking shop because the power of the gun far outweighs the power of the pen in Libya at the moment. However, it is also effective in the sense that perhaps some Libyans are realizing that their divisions, whether it is religious or tribal or political, are tearing the country apart, and what needs to be done is not have the Khawarij versus the Takfiris, the secular versus the religious, but actually focus on the citizenship of Libya.
Now, in the Catholic Church, we are focusing on the family somewhat in Rome in the coming synod. It just occurs to me that we should be thinking about all those families across the Middle East at the moment, those that are separated, those that are terrified, those that don't live in their homes anymore and long to go back to their homelands. What would your thoughts be on that?
My thoughts would be ones of prayer, compassion, empathy with all those families. It is very interesting, James, when we look at the refugees across in Lebanon, in Jordan, in Turkey, even the internally displaced in Iraq and other countries of the MENA region, you realize that the majority of the people are kids and women. The men aren't there. So it is a clear fact that those families have been rent asunder. They've been torn apart. And of course, at a time when we do think of a family, when the synod will take place in Rome, focusing on that, perhaps it is time for us to ask, how do you heal those wounds? How do you, even today in the heat of battle, we're not thinking about what happens with post-traumatic disorder, what happens with the sense of bereavement. We're thinking more of, oh, what can we do here and now? But the other aspect of it, healing those wounds, the psychological endeavor ahead of us is going to be even more challenging.
Dr. Harry Hagopian, that really is a whistle-stop tour, but thank you for focusing on those three key elements outside of our Middle East Analysis standard podcast.
You know, sometimes it's almost difficult to do long podcasts because by the time they're posted, realities on the ground have changed. So perhaps the way that you've suggested doing it today, which are snapshots, vignettes, audio vignettes of Libya, of Iraq, of the situation with the refugees, the Kurds, the Yazidis and the Christians coming out of Iraq, and also our sense of empathy and prayer with the families of all those bereaved, not only in Iraq, but also in Syria, also in Libya, also in Yemen, all those countries that are actually hot conflict zones, as the International Crisis Group would qualify them. I think perhaps this is one way of just throwing in a couple of ideas for our listeners to consider, think about, and maybe even act on.
That's the international lawyer, Dr. Harry Hagopian, who is also, very importantly, our consultant on the Middle East North Africa region. Thank you, Harry. Now I'm going to plug your Twitter, at Harry Hagopian, because yes, if things get a bit older, if you are trying to keep up to date with the latest, in Harry's own style, you will see it on at Harry Hagopian on Twitter. And the Catholic Church, we are at Catholic EW, and the home for Middle East Analysis is catholicnews.org.uk/Mina.
And you know what, James? I'm not sure anymore with you whether you consider my Twitter esoteric or eccentric.
Oh, I'm not answering that.
Our listeners decide for themselves.
Yes, you can all decide. I'd say it's enjoyable and thought-provoking. Bit political of me. There we go. So, yes, we will return, Harry, in October with our monthly Middle East
analysis. After I come back from my travels.
From your travels. So for today, thank you very much.
Pleasure.